sit down, boys, if I get a treat for you.
Fighting the fight when it comes to technology. We are the knights of the kingdom of geekery. We rise up when it comes to the challenge of discussing all this nerd knowledge. We are the digital soup. We are the digital soup. We bring information with lots of laughter. Tune in now if that's what you're after. Digital Soup. We are the Digital Soup. We are the Digital Soup. With Jason, Adam, and usually Dave.
And welcome back to Digital Soup, the only podcast taking 2020 by storm. That's right, we're going to own this year. This is the year of the soup, the digital soup.
Digital soup.
Okay, for a second I was going to say, maybe it's just me. Maybe it's going to be digital soup with Jason. That's going to be it.
Yeah. No.
And then maybe occasionally Dave and Adam.
Yeah, maybe. Yep.
Every once in a while.
Anyway, my name is Jason, and joining me in the virtual studio today is Adam, and usually Dave. And the biggest thing I have to ask is, how was you guys' New Year's? What'd you guys do New Year's Eve?
Oh, man. I got into a time machine powered by the flux capacitor, and I redid 19 over again.
Well, oh. You went all the way back to January 1st, 2019?
Yep, I had some things I wanted to redo.
No, I would go farther back than that. I mean, wouldn't you want to do like the Back to the Future and kind of like go back in time and
maybe
buy some stocks that are important?
We talked about that. What would we do if we could go back in time to the 80s? Oh, man.
Oh, there's so much I would do. But not Adam. He's like, I just want to go back 1 year. I want to relive 2019 again because it was the best year ever.
Hey.
I didn't really care for 2019. 2019 wasn't a kick butt year. I mean, it wasn't horrible, but there was nothing standout about it to me. What about you guys? Did you guys think 2019 was, you know, all that in a bag of chips?
I had a big life change this year, so it was good.
What was that? Oh, we both had new jobs, but yours was even more because you're a stay-at-home house husband.
That's nice.
Come on, that's the joke. It's so funny. I mean, this guy makes buku bucks, you know, in the tech world, working from home, and I call him a house husband. That's what's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's like calling a fat guy slim. It's the same thing. It's ironic, don't you think?
It's like Ray Yane.
And did Dave drop his arm again? Because he hasn't spoken in a while.
I'm here, just listening.
It's backseat Dave today. I mean, usually, you know, Dave is talking over us.
Oh, yeah. That's usually me. I was waiting. I mean, I wanted to hear what you guys said about 2019. Adam was letting us know what he had going on. So,
well, every year has its ups and downs. You know how it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I do. Yep. I have to say my 2019 overall was relatively decent in most ways. I mean, things move forward. A lot of new friends made in the digital world, I guess you'd say. Got a lot of projects going and clarified and underway, and so that's all been good. And then, we had a death in the family, which kind of, you know, brings down the end of the year. But overall, I mean, can't complain. It wasn't a terrible year, and we got to see some amazing films this year. I mean,
true.
That sounds kind of trite and simplistic, but it's the truth. I mean, 2019 might have been one of the most amazing years for movies that I can remember in decades.
I know one of the big movies we watched last year was Masters of the Universe. I mean, I cannot get that out of my head. It was so good.
No, just amazing. I mean,
when are they
going
to reboot that? Marvel needs to grab that and reboot it.
Kevin Smith, if you listen to the show.
Yes, I know, the cartoon, but.
Yeah, they're redoing it. I don't know if we'll ever see a live action, but 2019 in, you know, movies was pretty amazing, and that had me pumped.
You know, we should have, not this episode because we already have this one planned out, but we should do a retrospective of the films of 2019. We could probably do a whole episode easily on that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we could.
Yep.
Maybe that's something we're going to have to put in the, what do you call that, in the satchel? We'll put that in our satchel.
Hopper?
Ooh, we'll put it in our fanny packs for later.
Not sure I have one of those.
You know what, we should be the fanny pack boys. All three of us just wear fanny packs. We could go to malls and just walk around the malls with fanny packs on. See if anybody goes, hey, nice fanny pack. And every time somebody says that, we give them a $100 bill. We'll be like those YouTubers that are like, you know, spending all that money. Hey, hold on to this money for, you know, as long as you can and you win it. $1 million. What was it? That was a stack of $1 million bills?
No clue what
you're talking about. I'm not familiar with what you're talking about.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I guess you guys don't watch YouTube. Have you ever heard of the guy, Mr. Beast?
No.
Rich guy. He does all this crazy stuff. Okay.
Not really.
Well, look it up. Okay. Look it up.
We'll have to look it up.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of 2019, guys, there was a lot of good stuff in 2019, but there was also some really bad stuff. And being that we are a tech show, we definitely have to take a look at some of the worst tech that came out in 2019, don't we?
I think we should.
We should. And without, okay, we're looking at, Engadget did a great article on the worst tech of 2019, which we're kind of basing this on. But we can expand on this. We don't have to talk about just the stuff they had here. But their number one thing was the first thing I thought of when I thought of the worst tech of 2019. What do you guys think it is?
The worst thing.
Well, I'm not going to weigh in because I'm looking at the news story, so I know the answer.
Well, the absolute worst tech of 2019 has to be foldable phones. Just everything that happened with the Galaxy Fold, the first iteration of it that came out, and then all the issues it had with it. Second iteration came out, and it still was just as bad. Still issues popping up. Maybe Motorola with their new Razr, maybe that hinge or whatever, they'll have a better system. But foldable phones, guys, it's just not ready for prime time. What do you think?
I agree. I don't see the use in it, actually.
I think we need to get some more flexible materials that, you know what I mean, where it's not something that could break easily and it's not twice as thick.
My thought on it is this. These foldable phones are foldable because they have larger displays, right? And by and large, I don't know what the actual normal size is, but the Note 7 I know was a debacle a while back, but then this new Galaxy Fold, that's a pretty big screen. And for years, they've been working to get away from, you know, that's why the batteries, these phones are getting slimmer and slimmer. They're working to get away from that thicker, chunky design that actually was pretty brilliant in, say, like the iPhone 4S or whatever. And now you're going to get a foldable phone so that when it's in your pocket, it's actually as thick or thicker than those older phones. I mean, you've worked all this time to make the phone as slim as possible just so you can play origami with it and now double its size again.
And one of the worst things about a foldable phone is I'm sure you guys might be one too, but there's tons of people out there that are fidgeters. How many people would purchase a $1,500 foldable phone and just without even thinking about it, they're sitting there, you know, at work or they're sitting in the chair watching a show and they're just fold, unfold.
Yeah.
That has to have a finite amount of folds, actual closures before it actually snaps. And fidgeters are going to destroy this thing easily.
And fidget spinners.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, those became popular because there are so many fidgeters out there. Exactly.
You know, speaking of fidgeting, there was this thing. I wish I could find it. It was. You know how like, well, Adam, you don't use Instagram really. Jason, you've seen it. We've all seen the random, you know, pop up ads that show up in your Instagram feed or Twitter feed or whatever else. I saw this one, and I don't know why it popped up for me, but it's like a little sphere that goes on your desk. And it looks like you spin it. It's for fidgeting. You put it on your desk and you just spin it. But it's got a design like a groove all the way around it that's like a spiral. So when you spin it, it looks like the ball is actually melting down continuously into your desk, even though it's not, you know, doing anything. And they've got the bottom is like a flat side with a silent ball bearing in there, they said. So it's not going to annoy anybody. It's super quiet. And you just you sit and you can just spin it on your desk like that. It's not real big, about the size of a golf ball. And it's just like this kinetic energy looking thing where the spiral gives it the appearance of either, depending on which direction you spin it, either it's rising up out of the desk or melting down into the desk. It just fascinated me. I watched that stupid little video on Instagram, just let it loop on repeat for like 10 minutes one day. I was like, I need one of these. It was like 25 bucks. I almost ordered it.
It does sound pretty cool.
It does sound cool.
I should. Things I'll see like if that, I can find it.
Yeah, and maybe you could purchase that for me.
It's basically foldable screens.
Foldable screens.
What other tech do you think was horrible? Not even, you don't even have to look at the article, but just think in general, what other tech?
So I think one of the things, and I didn't look at all the article yet, but I was thinking Facebook Portal. Right after all the security stuff and all the talk about privacy comes out, suddenly Facebook comes out with a video device for chatting that you can put in your house with a camera and microphone on it.
And this is the one, if I remember right, the camera and stuff follows you as you walk around. Like it'll track you through your living room or whatever, so you can walk around. They show in the commercials like woman's making cookies and her parents are on the other end or whatever, and as she's walking around the kitchen, it's basically following her, and as her parents are walking around on their dining room or whatever, it's following her. Yeah, that's not creepy at all.
Especially with all the stuff that's been going on with like the Ring getting hacked. Can you imagine hackers getting a hold of this that can actually move around and actually follow people? Man, yeah, that is not, as Adam would say. Adam?
Not good.
Perfect. Thank you. It's one of those invasive things that if it wasn't an internet device, if it was just, but of course the whole concept of it has to be an internet device, but if it wasn't an internet device, it was like somehow just local, that's different. But anything that's connected to the internet, a hacker can get into. Can you imagine hackers getting into your internet connected refrigerator and changing your temperature to 80 degrees and spoiling all your food? This type of stuff is dangerous. I mean, keep the internet out of stupid stuff.
I hope my fridge doesn't have a setting where I could turn it to 80. Yeah. Please heat my food.
That'd be wild.
We added an element in here.
They just shut it off.
Okay. We'll just say that. And it gets up to room temp, which could be 80.
Well, and it was funny that you mentioned the Facebook portal, because my thought, you know, not looking at the article, but when I thought of worst tech of 2019, I didn't necessarily go to a specific gadget. I thought just in general about Facebook and all of the massive privacy concerns with all of these devices, you know, like you were saying, but especially with social media.
So is Jason in this story then, what are some of the other ones? Facebook in here?
Facebook is in there, yes. Sweet. That is one of the stories. And then, of course, the Huawei. Huawei was in here with
Huawei is another one. Isn't that a big privacy issue, why that's showing up? Yeah. So it sounds like a lot of the worst tech in a lot of ways is coming because of security concerns, right?
Yeah, and it's not just Facebook. Also, Amazon and other Silicon Valley companies were called out on the security stuff. Yeah, and like Dave said, it's a lot of security stuff. But one thing that isn't a security concern, but did wind up on this list, is Google Stadia.
The gaming platform?
Exactly. Now, they're calling it, they say it may be the best cloud gaming service in history, but it still has plenty of problems due to the internet infrastructure issues, which are completely out of Google's control, of course. You have the inconsistent connections, lag, delay from controllers and stuff, and that's just what happens when you're sending trying to send controller signals over the internet. I mean, it's just going to happen.
I think every online game suffers from lag and stuff like that. But with Stadia, though, aren't you also getting video?
Videos come a long way. So, what they keep talking mostly about is the input lag. I mean, you can't play these fighting games and stuff where you hit the button and it's like a second later it reacts. It's not as long as a second, but even a millisecond, you feel that. It's not instantaneous. when you're playing it locally, yeah, it's instantaneous or
right, right,
pretty near
latency, that, low latency.
It's almost, yeah, like you're this will sound like a weird analogy, but like you're playing in mud or something, you know, where it's just everything.
That's the way
feels
I like to play
harder.
All my games, Dave, is in the mud.
Yeah. Just sit there playing in the mud.
You know how it is, like when a car's brakes are starting to go and you got to push that thing right to the floor. It's the same thing. You end up pushing your buttons on your controller because of that slight lag, and you're just pushing harder, thinking, oh, maybe that'll make it catch up. But
speaking of that, how stupid were we as, you know, young kids, young teenagers, etc., how we would get these cramps in our hands for playing games because we would hold that button so hard. We're doing a racing game. You have to hold a button down for gas, and we are holding that sucker hard. Like, the harder we press it, the faster we go.
See, I didn't get...
human nature.
Yeah, I didn't get that as much. I always was able to keep control of, like, how hard I was gripping the controller. But what used to get me, especially on NES and SNES, is that thumb on the D-pad when you're playing stuff. Like, I remember one of the worst for me was playing ice hockey on the NES. Games like that just killed my thumb because you're constantly mm-hmm. moving. You know, it's not like you're moving a little bit and then jumping and stopping and up and down, you know, or playing like Street Fighter or something like that, where you're constantly raking your thumb across that D-pad doing the half circles, you know what I mean, to do the different moves. That just used to kill my thumb.
The worst game on the NES for killing your hands was track and field, buddy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You'd have to go with your fingers going between the A and B button as fast as you can. Left, right, left, right.
The secret to taking care of all of it is to use butter on your hands.
Okay, I'm grossed out now at the thought of Adam's NES controllers after about 5 years of every time they're used, they just butter them up, and it's like just caked with rancid butter.
The extra garlic sauce packet from Papa John. You're just dipping your thumbs in there.
Dave, do you not remember this trend through our 20s?
Of what?
You never wanted to play a controller after Adam had it, because not only was it covered in sweat, because Adam sweat like a beast. His hands sweat like a beast, but it was sweaty Cheeto guck all over it because he was eating Cheetos the whole time too.
I don't remember that. No,
I'll be
true
honest.
Story.
When I game, if I'm eating a snack, I will use a pair of chopsticks because I like. I swear to God, I like clean hands. You will not get Cheeto dust in your hands or Doritos.
Cheetos
dust.
With a chopstick.
Yep. Hey, the science is there. It works.
You know what else works? As long as you're the only one. As long as you're the only one eating out of that bag. Is just open that bag up, get the corner right up to your mouth, and tip the bag
I know
up.
What you're gonna say?
Dump it.
Just
on your
pour
face.
Them right in. Then you have that at the bottom of the bag. The problem is all that residue that's in the bottom of the bag just comes flying out, and you got like it's all in your beard, like just orange Cheeto dust everywhere.
I can just imagine Dave. He's going out, and he's got yellow beard. Yellow orange beard.
Hey, you know, were you eating Cheetos?
No,
I'm Irish.
So this, whoa. So this Christmas we bought one of those big bins of like the cheese balls from Walmart.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's like a
massive
thing.
I know you talk about.
And we were having fun just throwing them at each other from a distance, trying to get them.
Oh no!
In the house?
Yeah. So every time that if one hit the side of your face, you'd have a big cheese mark on your face.
Is that what you guys are gonna do? Okay, listeners. I know we joked at the beginning here because you're listening to this on Friday, but tomorrow's New Year's Eve. So is that what you're gonna do tomorrow night, Adam? You and the family gonna have cheese ball games?
No, because we ate them all.
Well, you can purchase more. Walmart still is open.
One a year.
So
we don't eat. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to ask. Hey, we're all parents here, and your cheese ball story made me think of this. Now,
gee, that sounds like it's a bad story. Your actual
cheese balls. I saw a toy. I forget what store I was in, a Walmart or Target or something like that. Oh, I know. It was in a local, like a Fleet Farm, L&M Supply. And this was a toy for kids in the aisle next to the Super Soakers. And my dad, I had to tell him, no way in bleep that you're going to buy that and send that to my house. What it was a Super Soaker type, like squirt gun almost, but it wasn't a squirt gun. You attached a roll of toilet paper to the side.
Oh, yeah.
Which was your ammunition. And then it fed into this little thing, and it was filled with water. And every shot, it was basically making toilet paper spitballs.
Oh, okay, no. I didn't know it was adding water to it. That's a different concept.
Yeah, it adds a little bit of water, just takes a little chunk of the toilet paper and water. It says perfectly sized every time. Easy cleanup. Yeah, right. Sized. Can you imagine kids running around the house just blasting away with this and having little, you know, they were about quarter size, it looked like, when they were hitting the pictures on the wall and stuff. Quarter-sized toilet paper wads that had been wetted down just splattering all over your house. That makes worst tech of 2019 for me.
It should, yeah. Well, you know, your kids are going to be very upset with you and call you a fuddy-duddy for not letting grandpa get it for them, because they would enjoy that.
They can call me whatever they want as long as it's not in my house.
When daddy comes home, it's war zone, and they're like diving behind couches and stuff as they're firing at you. That would be hilarious. That's like, oh, what was that? Dane Cook. He said he wanted to have a monkey because he wanted to battle that monkey whenever he came home from work. Yeah,
I'll tell you what.
Come in the door. If I walk in the door
of my house and my kids start shooting me with basically toilet paper spitballs, there's going to be a problem. After I dip the whole roll of toilet paper at once into the sink or whatever and throw it like a toilet paper grenade, after I blast each of them in the face with one of those, then there's going to be a problem.
The big problem is going to be your wife talking to you about how you're wasting toilet paper.
Well, yeah.
Toilet paper's not that expensive. But Dave, no, you got to go one step farther, okay? So on your way home from your job, you stop off at the local 7-Eleven or whatever you have, and you go inside and you buy like the 64-ounce Slurpee, okay? You drink that on the way home.
Stop.
Then you go to the restroom, and then you dip a whole thing of toilet paper in the toilet. It's urine soaked.
I'm grossed out now.
But what you else? Would win.
I'm so
don't you want to win, Dave?
I don't think there's a winner in that situation.
Yeah, no, there is no winner there.
So other worst tech of 2019, we've got 5G.
Yep. Explain this to me, because I keep seeing new 5G speeds, but I also keep seeing reports that it has hardly rolled out anywhere yet. So
it hasn't.
How are they calling it the worst tech when it hasn't actually really materialized?
I think they're calling it the worst tech from the article just because its adoption rate is so low. It's only in a few of the big cities, and I think the infrastructure is just too expensive to roll out, especially in rural areas. So I'm assuming that's probably what it is.
The real failure is that. The failure is the customer fatigue, because we haven't gotten it yet, but they've been saying, oh, 5G, 5G, 5G.
And look at all the phones that say, can handle 5G. Well, yeah. I don't have 5G service.
And it started with AT&T basically saying, hey, we've got 5G. But it was confusing because they never actually activated any of the technology that's part of the 5G standard. So that prompted Verizon to write a stern letter to them. And T-Mobile went to Twitter and mocked them for it. And then Sprint sued them over the branding. And so, but you know who nobody has 5G yet, you know, and if they do, it's in really small pockets. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that the technology itself is going to be a failure when it rolls out. It just means their campaign of, hey, 5G, here it is. No, it's not. Well, that was the failure.
Let me ask, because I mean, when it comes to mobile phones and what we do with them, is 5G going to, I mean, don't we get to a point where, there's a name for it and I can't think of it, where you get to a
diminishing
point where,
returns?
Yeah, basically where, you know, no matter how much you want to claim it's the latest, greatest, best thing, you're really not actually benefiting that much from an average consumer standpoint.
Let me answer this, Adam, and then you can, have your retort. Just like internet speeds at home, the faster the better. It just improves your everyday life, be it streaming, work, anything is better if your connection is faster. So I do believe that we do need our internet on our phones, which 4G is fantastic. 4G LTE, I'm sure you guys have that too in your area. It's great. I remember having 2G. 4G is amazing. It's not just 2G's more. It's way more.
Yeah, 4G is a rap joke in there? 2G's more? Is it like, I don't know. Sorry.
So 4G, that's good. 4G, you know, a lot of people, you get with 4G LTE, you're getting faster speeds than you do even at your home internet connection in some cases, which is that's probably just the way it is, especially in rural areas.
Definitely in Dave's.
You know, if they push out 5G, which is way, 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 way faster in theory, that's going to increase the ability for people to, you know, that could be their primary home internet connection in theory. You could have more different applications that take up a lot more bandwidth and provide a lot more stuff, a lot more data intensive things. So it opens up this huge door. There's a lot of possibility for it. There's also a contingent out there that thinks that the actual radio transmission and the frequency of this stuff is a danger to the public.
Yeah, yeah. Ask Kenneth. He'll tell you.
Yeah. What's the frequency, Kenneth?
5G.
Apparently it's 5G.
Yeah.
5G in itself is not a frequency. It's actually which
you know what? I just play along once in a while, okay?
Well, I did. That's what I repeated the name of the song. Gah. I was just trying to remember what the actual frequency is for 5G. It's somewhere between 30 gigahertz and 300 gigahertz. It's some high frequency band. But yeah.
Well, here's a cool aspect of it. You know, there are Windows laptops out there that actually have cellular radios in it. So this is awesome. Instead of having to rely on Wi-Fi in just specific areas, you could actually go out into, say, Dave's out photographing something, say wildlife or scenes, or maybe he has, you know, like a wedding, but he's out in some rural area where there is no Wi-Fi around. If he had a laptop with a, you know, a cellular radio and 5G, he'd be uploading these raw files like mad up to the, you know, the cloud. I mean, that's a great aspect for fast internet is for laptops with cellular radios. There's not a single Apple laptop that has a cellular radio. You have to do Windows to get that. And I think they need to roll this out for all laptops, at least give it an option.
That is one option, or else if your personal phone doubles as your hotspot, then you have that level speed, you know, at least between your two devices if you set it up as local Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
So, you know, anyway,
something you said there, Adam, you know, the concerns about the radio frequency itself, in all seriousness, you know, the song jokes aside, where people are concerned about the impact of that on not only humans, but animal life and everything else, you know, because those frequencies may be, you know, causing some actual disruptions in our brains or whatever. And this will sound kind of crazy, but It for some reason it invokes this idea in my head, like as that technology goes and you think of all of the devices that are just connected, you know, and you remember when we were real young and they were trying to explain how the internet worked, and you kind of always got like this picture in your head that it's little bits of data flying through, you know, the air instantly, yep. You know. What if it got to a point where, in theory, all the frequencies and all the stuff, the bandwidth, the Bluetooth and everything else, it was literally like almost like you were walking through a dust storm. I mean, but what, like physically, though, like you could, when you went into, say, a big city that had a ton of population and some real high speed stuff and everything else, if it was almost like you'd feel it hitting you. You know what I mean?
That'd be something
like
else.
Sandblasting your face almost. I don't know.
Luckily, you know, radio frequencies, you don't physically feel them unless you're talking like microwave stuff where it could heat up things. Yeah. But one of the things, there's a lot of fear about high frequency stuff, and there's been a lot of fear about cell phone things, you know, throughout history. Like back in the 90s, cell phones are coming out, you're going to get brain cancer, blah, blah, blah. And 5G is operating on an even higher frequency.
Right.
And when it comes to, you know, the experts that talk about the biological effects of electromagnetic radiation, radio waves, it's basically and my brother was telling me this too, he's an engineer, radio waves and waves in general become safer at higher frequencies, not more dangerous. So the higher up you go, the less risk of, you know, that exposure.
Does radio waves in that respect, do they work similar to how like a sound wave? I mean, in terms of like, you know, you think about the sound waves and how they've been able to quote unquote weaponize that. where they'll hit a certain type of note and frequency range, and it'll just make you unable to stop crying. You know, you hear these stories.
Depends
about
on what's
stuff.
Playing on the
it's
radio.
It's the crying.
No, way. No. I mean, this is
no. It's radio wave spectrum is electromagnetic. So I mean, it's you think about. At the top end of that, you've got like gamma rays, then you've got X-rays, ultraviolet, then you've got the visible light spectrum, infrared light, and then radio wave. It's technically still, I think it's still light.
Oh, okay.
And then you have your ultra-low frequencies.
If somebody might
correct me on that and say like, what are you talking about?
We're not high-end engineers, but in that scenario, I would imagine that the higher the radio frequency, essentially the brighter the light, if you were to think of it that way. Where it gets to a point where it's pure?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. It's just faster.
Yeah.
So the visible light spectrum is actually, I mean, it's pretty narrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But it's a little faster than infrared. But as soon as you get into ultraviolet, you can't really see it anymore.
Yeah.
But it still hits you and can damage you. X-rays, technically, I mean, so maybe this is the thing. X-rays are... still, I mean, you're getting higher light, faster light still.
Right.
That's pretty dangerous. Gamma rays, that's pretty dangerous. But
right.
The radio wave spectrum, all the way up to the 300 gigahertz, is still below infrared light. So infrared light is, you know, so it's still below that spectrum.
Question for you, Adam.
Yeah.
How do you know this?
Well, I just so happened to be looking at a chart on spectrums of stuff. Because
I was
going to
say,
this
is way above my pay grade. I don't know where you're getting this.
The source is the source is NASA and the National Academy of Sciences and this kind of stuff.
So you Googled it.
I Googled this, but this was after I had conversations. I had a conversation over Christmas break with my brother on 5G and stuff like that. And he's not a 5G radio expert or anything, but He's a smart guy with physics and engineering mechanical engineering backgrounds. So it was kind of cool to hear his take on.
So
he's not worried.
Not to change a subject, but I need to ask about this one on the list. I see that the Surface Pro X is here. Now, I haven't read necessarily what they didn't like about it, but I was under the impression that people generally have pretty high opinions of these Surface setups for various applications. It was something different with this one.
Well, what the article was saying here, I basically just skimmed through it too because I wanted to find out what they were talking about. And it's, I guess, recompiling all the standard Windows apps, the x86 apps, to work on the ARM processor. It was in theory, it was supposed to be easy. It was supposed to make it so companies could easily recompile their programs and put it to work here on, you know, the Surface Pro, and that hasn't been the case. It's actually been kind of hard, and some of the software that has actually been ported over to it has been doing a lot of crashing, etc. So that's kind of there's nothing wrong with the hardware. The hardware's great. The hardware's fast. ARM is where we're heading. Even Apple is, you know, all of their iPods, iPads, and iPhones run on ARM processors where, you know, when they benchmark these are actually faster than a lot of the Intel stuff and the AMD stuff, of course. So that's why Apple is going to be, over the next 10 years, they're going to be transitioning all of their, you know, the Mac Minis, the Mac Pros, all of their MacBooks, all to ARM processors. It's been in the works for a while here. ARM is where we're going because it is very, very, it just sips energy. It's very energy efficient, but it's very powerful. So yeah, the Surface Pro is awesome, but it's running on a it's running on a different architecture than what our standard PCs are, the x86, Intel, AMD, et cetera, processors and motherboards, et cetera. So everything has to be ported over to it, and there's some issues.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
If you're developing a program on the Windows platform, typically you're going to choose, you know, either a 32-bit or a 64-bit x86 architecture. That's like your target. That's built to work that way. So if you're trying to port an application over to a new architecture, it might not work or might not be stable.
Yeah, and that's just where it's at right now. Possibly, you know, in the future, it's going to be a little bit easier. Hopefully, you know, they'll be able to just run their program through something Microsoft gives them, a conversion program, does it all easily. Who knows?
Microsoft Word.
Yeah. Well, I think Microsoft has their first-party stuff on there working perfect. This is basically third-party programs.
Oh, like a GameStop third-party controller.
Exactly. Man, I hope I can get one.
So, I mean, we're talking about some of the worst tech of 2019. What are some things that we might want to recommend?
Digital Soup Recommendation.
I have something I have to recommend here. And as I think on last week's episode, I did let everybody know, I did get a Nintendo Switch Lite for Christmas.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's my recommendation.
Wow, were you surprised?
I was. I mean, when my jaw dropped. Do you remember those pictures of kids getting like the N64s and stuff? And then the videos, they're like, ah, that's what I was Christmas born. Ah, Switch Lite, yay!
It's a good thing you have short-term memory loss.
Yes. Switch Lite, though, is awesome. It is an awesome, awesome system. It's everything Dave wants, and hopefully someday we'll be able to get. I have enjoyed laying in bed before I go to sleep at night and playing a little bit of Breath of the Wild. Or I do have the Crash Nitro Edition, the Crash Team Racing Nitro Edition. Been playing that, opening up some boards. A lot of fun. Just, it's a great system. Now, the one thing that I kind of wish I would have got a standard Switch for it is the screen is 5.5 inches, I believe, something like that. And I believe the Switch, the regular Switch is like 6.1. I could use a larger screen because I am 48. I don't have the best eyesight in the world. I play everything on a 10-inch iPad. So now when I go to a 5.5-inch, the text is very small. Like RPGs, very, very small. So I'm like really kind of squinting trying to figure out what some of this the wording is on here.
Squinting Tarantino.
What was that?
Squinting Tarantino?
Yes, yes, he did some great games on this. But that's my recommendation because it's a fantastic system. It is the best handheld system I've ever played in my life. The graphics are amazing. The sound coming out of the system, I haven't even hooked in my headphones into it because the speakers that are on it is beautiful. It is perfect sounding while I'm laying in bed playing it, so it's like bouncing off the bed and the wall and stuff, so it's not having to fill a cathedral or anything. But, I mean, it's great. The response is, you know, the controller response is great.
What about people, though, that want to sleep in a cathedral, Jason?
Well, you know, then they can do that, but it might be a little chilly, so you might want to bring a heated blanket.
Oh, okay.
And that's Adam's recommendation. No, but that's my recommendation. What do you guys got?
Nice. I'm going to recommend something, if Dave doesn't mind that I go first.
No, go ahead.
The Craig Pocket Hole Jig. Now, this has nothing to do with new technology stuff, but everything to do with wood joinery. Yes. This is something I was asking for. I do woodwork stuff.
Oh, is this like wood husbandry?
I really want one of these.
This thing is awesome. My wife got this for me for Christmas, and if you're not familiar with a pocket hole, it's a better way to join two boards. That's way, way stronger than going into the end grain using a butt joint. Don't laugh, Jason. A butt joint. And it's basically this guide that helps you. It comes with a specialized drill bit and everything that you need in this one little kit to make pocket holes, which it's kind of like you're screwing into an angle into the board, but it makes you do it just perfectly. And it's like a real super quick way to build clean looking furniture and joints and stuff like that. And it's a fantastic addition to any wood shop. That's the Craig Pocket Hole Jig.
It looks awesome. I'm looking at their website right now. Unfortunately, this is, and I mentioned it before, this is way above my pay grade. I cannot make stuff. I am horrible like this.
I bet you could.
I hate putting together IKEA stuff, let alone, you know, trying to do something like this.
Well, the thing is, that's cool. You know, sometimes the most useful part of this is that, you know, you can so easily hide all of those joints.
Yeah,
you know, and that's, I mean, not only is it letting you secure stuff in a super secure fashion, but it's so easily hidden and just makes everything look better.
Yep. A buddy of mine made a bunch of furniture at his house, and he said, you got to check this thing out, and he showed me how it worked. I'm like, holy cow. Mm-hmm. The joints are uber strong, and you can't see anything, and if you decide you want to plug the whole, they even come with, like, wood plugs. You can throw some glue in there, throw a plug in it, sand it down, and you're done. It's just fantastic.
Right.
Now, when you're saying he's, you know, created a whole bunch of furniture, what are we talking about here? Like,
we're talking
kitchen,
about a full-size dresser,
tables and stuff?
Full-size dresser for his daughter's bedroom, dang, nicely finished, and nightstand, and basically any of his other projects, his whole workshop, all his workshop furniture, he uses Craig jig.
Yeah.
So and there's Craig's not the only one that makes pocket
hole
jig.
No, it's that's what I was going to say. They call it, it's Craig is a brand, and they're probably the biggest branded one. Yep. It's a pocket hole jig, but they do a really nice job. You know who can give you some good info on using this, Adam, would be our buddy Vinny from Because We Make. He knows quite a bit about
this
stuff.
Does he do furniture?
He loves coffee tables. He's going to yell at me now for saying that. No, he does a mix of everything. It's a long time joke on Because We Make that he used coffee tables as an example for something. And now every episode it gets brought up about coffee tables. But no, Vinny makes all
absolutely.
Vinny makes all kinds of stuff from woodworking and he makes these beautiful like butcher block cutting boards and stuff. I mean, real nice stuff. But then he also does a ton of like jewelry and the engraved stuff that I've talked about and showed you guys. And he's doing all kinds of stuff, but yeah, I remember talking to him a little while back about like, are these worth the money? And he's like, oh man, if you're building stuff, it's a necessity.
So I'm excited to have, I can't wait for my next project. Anyway, Dave, what is your recommendation today?
Well, I'm going to read this description for you real quick, and then I'll tell you what it is. See what you think of this. Bad guys, black hats, evildoers. They're the bane of every hero's existence and the subject of Parcast's dastardly new original series, Villains. So this is a podcast I discovered that Spotify recommended in, they're recommended for you type thing. And I've only listened to one episode, and I have to say that this episode just blew me away. It was so good. And the episode I listened to, I don't think they number them necessarily, but it's a fictional episode. Well, it's based on a fictional villain, where they go into this deep dive on the Joker from obviously Batman comics. They start with his, first introduction in the comics through all the iterations in the movies and comic book adaptations and, television series and all that. But it's not just a history of the character. It's kind of a breakdown of like, here's the psychology behind this character. Like, here's why he's so evil. Here's the type of villain he is and the mindset behind it and how he believes and all that kind of stuff. It's one of the most amazing breakdowns of the Joker that I have ever heard. Now, there are other episodes. I mean, they do a mix of fictional villains and real life villains, which are like, sometimes serial killers and, stuff like that.
Yeah, I see that here, like Jeffrey Dahmer. They got a 3-part
series. Yeah, well, in this Jeffrey Dahmer series, that's a Parcast special. This Parcast is a big podcast network. That 3-part series is on every single podcast on their network aired that 3-part series. So that wasn't the villains people, but I mean, the most recent episode, if I remember, it's called Octave Garnier and the Bonnot Gang. The description there says the Joker may be the fictional embodiment of chaos, but what was the true inspiration behind his evil? And they're talking about a real life people, person and group of people that may have been the inspiration for that character. So brilliantly done, really, really well researched. And just paced. I mean, it was just a fascinating listen. So, Villains by on the Parcast Network, I recommend that highly.
Fantastic.
I really wish I could listen to some of this stuff like that. One, the zombie, We're Alive. Is that what it was called?
Yeah, Alive.
We're Alive.
I would have loved to have finished that. I just
You never finished it? They've got their... I've got a binge their new season is out. And I waited till it finished. It finished up just a little while ago, a month or so ago, called We're Alive Gold Rush. It's kind of a sequel of sorts to the main We're Alive story. But
here's the issue, though, is I only listen to podcasts when I'm driving. And something like that I'd want to focus more on, where I'm just listening to a talky podcast. You know, it's easy enough to drive and listen to that. but I would want to listen to the acting, all the background stuff, and I wouldn't be able to focus on that while I'm, you know, fighting bumper to bumper traffic on the way to work in crazy busy Dover, Ohio.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, ever since I stopped commuting, it's been harder for me to listen to podcasts. And now it's like, you know, nighttime, throw the headphones on, and I'll fall asleep halfway through it. I set a timer, so I never get through anything.
Oh. Yeah, he usually falls asleep during Digital Soup. He's like, yep. Dave and Jason.
Speaking of villains, it looks like there was a ransomware attack in Arkansas, and it forced an Arkansas CEO to fire 300 employees just days before Christmas.
Jeez.
Which I don't like that title there. It almost sounds like they fired the 300 because they were somehow affiliated with the ransomware. It should have just said, like, laid off.
They couldn't afford to pay him.
Yeah. That's what the whole thing is here. And if you read this article, I was fuming by the end of this article when I was reading this, because hackers who infest companies' infrastructure with ransomware are the lowest of the low. In my opinion, they need to be put away indefinitely. Put them up there with mass murders and stuff, because look at this breakdown here. Like Adam was saying here, there was a telemarketing company in Sherwood, Arkansas. They employed a little over 300 employees, and they got infested with ransomware. The company scraped together all the money they could so they could pay the ransom, because they, just like any company out there, they need their systems so that they can actually function and make a profit. They paid it, and the hackers, being the trustworthy people they are, they did not release the system. They just took the money and ran. This company had nothing left to do. They had to close up shop. They had to lay off all 300 of their employees. And when I was reading this article, they even covered it in here. This is not the first company that this happened to. There's been quite a few companies where they've lost everything because of paying off, you know, the ransomware, and they just couldn't sustain their business anymore. Hackers think this is a victimless crime. Oh, these are big companies, that multi-billion-dollar companies. This is just a drop in the bucket to them. Well, no, this is a prime example here of the companies listening to this article. They're smaller companies, and you do this to them, not only does it bring down the company, it ruins the lives of every employee there, because now all of a sudden they're out of a job. Who knows when they're going to find another one? These people could have been living paycheck to paycheck, and now they're out of job. And it's horrible. And I don't know what we can do as a society. I understand the laws. I mean, if they're able to catch these people, which most of them are out of the U.S., so good luck on that. But if they catch these people, they can make examples of them, but they're not going to, and it's going to keep happening and keep happening. And more and more people could be put out of a job. And it just infuriates me, because they had to do this right before Christmas. Nobody wants to get laid off right before Christmas. And to not only be laid off, but go into the holidays with possibly no money. And then what am I going to do? Their whole holiday season is ruined.
So the article doesn't actually say that they didn't get the key back. They did pay to get the key. But they've been struggling to get their systems back up. I mean, this took them down so hard they weren't able to recover.
I thought I'd read that they didn't release it. Sorry.
Despite paying the attackers what they demanded, the company struggled to get back on its feet. And one of the reasons I said, wow, they actually didn't release the key. One of the keynotes that I listened to once on ransomware talked about how people that end up paying the key get the key. Because if it starts turning out that if you pay and you don't get the key, and then no one's going to ever pay.
Yeah.
So basically, this is another one of those, you know, it's an ounce of prevention versus a pound of cure to have full system backups and a really robust backup scheme for your business. You need to have this stuff in place, because in some situations, if you had strong backups, this is as easy as, hey, we got to take all the systems down tonight. We're going to restore everything from last night's backup. We're going to lose a day's worth of data, tops. Yep. You know, and then you've got everything back up. But if you never had that, now you've got major, major issues. Plus, I mean, there's a lot of nuance in here that, you know, we can't tell from the article what all happened on the back end there. But that's just horrific. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Jason. This is people playing with people's lives and not caring.
The thing about this is everybody needs to take Adam's advice here, and this is advice everybody gives, of course, but not everybody pays attention to. Back it up, like Adam said, you'll be down for a day. This is a small company, though. 300, they probably thought nobody's ever going to, why would they even come after us, right? Mm-hmm. We're not this, you know, big company, but some of the other companies that have been hit is one is Ear, Nose, and Throat and Hearing Center, which is, you know, a pretty big company. You think they would have had some backup. Let's see, what are some other companies? There's been several companies that have actually been, you know, the business has been shuttered because of it.
And ransomware doesn't really have a target. You know, it's not like a certain hacker went, you know, I'm going to go after this company.
Oh, they because, don't? I thought they had to actually target them.
Maybe in some cases they do, but at the last organization I was at when we got it, it was because somebody was browsing the web and their local PC got infected with it. And then it went to every single mapped drive they had and just started taking over and doing its thing and infecting that way. And because they were mapped to a network drive, which was shared by basically anybody that they, anything they had access to it, it took every single Word document, Excel document, PowerPoint, any Office document, PDF, image, and it encrypted it and left a little note inside of each directory saying, here's how you get your files back.
That's just crazy, man.
It's nuts, you know. And it was, luckily we caught it right away. And we actually pulled the network, you know, kill the network on that machine. It's all VMware stuff, so it's virtualized. Kill the network on that box and start the recovery process from last night. Everybody stop. I mean, we took an entire section of the network down just to respond to it to make sure the threat was stopped. But, I mean, you have to act fast. And a lot of these companies this size, they might not have a team. They might just outsource their IT when they have an issue, like a help desk. And, you know, it's not everybody can respond that way. So that just really sucks.
You got so lucky there. You know, this was a company you worked for in the past, right, that happened to?
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was the best case scenario there. And hopefully with this happening, and it seems like it's happening more and more, hopefully companies will get that wake-up call and they will get some type of backup infrastructure set up so that that's all they have to do. All right, let's bring the systems down for a day and we're good then. We're golden. Yep. And then this will stop. I'm sure they'll think of another way to try to get money from companies.
And I just want to add this too. The backups is a response to a problem that's gotten already to your network. They need to have... Security is always left last, it seems like. Oh, we got money for this, this, and this, but do we really need security? We got antivirus, that's good enough. No, it's not. I mean, there's so many different layers of security that you need for your network to protect against this stuff, starting with, you know, some people don't like this, but a web filter, something that's actually actively filtering the content of where your employees are going and stopping some of this. A lot of the web filters have built-in antivirus already and will actively block stuff based on categories and lists to stop viruses at the door, you know. And then each, you know, you're having a strong firewall, you're filtering for that stuff, you're making sure your servers have antivirus as well, you know.
But would an antivirus, technically, would that catch ransomware generally?
Well, let me rephrase. Maybe anti-malware is a better way to put it, because malware has gotten to be so much more than just a virus that has a signature that you can track. You'll have zero-day attacks. You'll have things that are, you know, morphing day to day that can kind of slip through, and other attacks like that that a standard antivirus isn't going to hit. Like if you look at, I'm using Webroot right now for mine. There's like a real-time shield. There's a web shield. There's a firewall. And this thing is actually scanning real time against, you know, rootkits and, you know, it's looking at your USB stuff. It's got, you know, whitelisted scripts, you know, it's looking at all kinds of stuff, just like any modern solution should have. It's got to be more than just straight AV.
Question, Webroot, is that a paid service or a paid program or is that free?
Yeah, it's paid.
Okay. Yep. So here's my question here. Say this company here that had 300, if they would have had Webroot installed, do you think this would have protected them enough, or is there another level that they need to go to further than that?
We can't say, really, you know what I mean? Not without knowing the attack vector that they used, which is the fancy term for how they got the virus in, you know, it could have been something, somebody got on their email, and or it could have been somebody installing something on the server on purpose, or doing something dumb.
Somebody there's found a USB thumb drive out in the parking lot, decided to throw it into the computer.
Stuck it in the port. You know, there's no one solution that's going to cover stuff, you know, and that's what's tough about security and why it's such a big industry is that there's so many different aspects of it. Everything from the network security part to, you know, physical security to how your policies are, what you're letting your employees do. I mean, that's it all ties in because one little thing like this can ruin a company. And it's only after the fact that they go, oh, in hindsight, you know, hindsight's 2020. Don't let 2020 be your hindsight 2020. Yeah. Go get this stuff done.
here's a question for you, Adam. Okay, we talk about VMware, and a lot of people run VMware to run different operating systems on different things or just different virtual instances of even the operating system that they're running on all their other PCs.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way to run that on every terminal that basically almost like a sandbox, like a walled garden sandbox to where anything you do on that PC, once you reboot it, it goes back to a pristine image, but they still able to save their work on a protected server?
Yeah. So there's a product out there. Last it was called, I think it was VMware Horizon. You're talking about virtualized desktops.
Yeah.
So virtual desktop infrastructure, VDI, is where you could have just a basic, you could even use a thin client or a regular PC, and then you're getting the operating system fed to you from a server. So you're actually, it's just like you're using a screen and you're sending keyboard, video, mouse, you know, just to the client. And in a lot of those cases, there's a profile that's associated with it. And if there's a problem with the machine or it gets infected, the administrator could just say, you know what, reboot, and you'll get a fresh image the next time you boot up. So no matter what you did on that machine, it could be, you know, back to clean factory settings on the next reboot. Meanwhile, you end up saving, you use network drives and things like that, or else like secured cloud storage or whatever it is that you want to do for saving your work.
Now, if they were to get their computer locked down by ransomware or even get just a really nasty virus, their data that goes to either like a NAS drive in their work, or if they save all of their documents and stuff onto a USB thumb drive, would those two instances get infected by that ransomware, or would it be clean as it goes over to them?
Well, if the machine's infected, I mean, what I've seen is it's going to infect anything that it's currently connected to. And not necessarily, I guess I should rephrase that. You wouldn't really infect like a network drive per se. It's the machine, the actual computer that's running an operating system that gets infected. It just goes out, and most of these ransomwares, as far as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, internet, but it's going to just encrypt those files, leave that ransom note, but it's actually the machine that got the infection that's doing the encrypting.
Okay, so that machine, okay, say it's Bob Smith. He's sitting at his terminal. He gets his VMware system.
Or Citrix or whatever flavor, yeah. Yes. There's all kinds of different ones.
Gets it infected with ransomware.
Mm-hmm.
That ransomware then cannot, because it's running on that system, it's not going to infect the file server, correct?
I don't know. Honestly, I can't say that with certainty, because maybe the virus is, maybe they've been modified to, you know, if it hits a server, then the whole server gets infected. I'm not sure.
But for the ransomware to work, it has to actually run something, correct?
Yep.
Where the file server any virus, is just storing files, typically, right?
Yeah. So
it's not actually running. It might be running like just a dumbed down version of Linux or something. It's not running a full operating system that could run
right,
whatever that might be. So maybe that's the way to go.
Your NAS drive is a good example of that. A NAS drive, there's going to be, if you're using, you know, or even like a USB drive, for mm-hmm. instance, some dumb storage, the device itself isn't infected. You know, it's not actually doing the encrypting. It's not actually taking the action, the executable. That's your machine that's doing it. But that does not guarantee that there's not something on that drive that if you plugged it into another machine would reinfect. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if there's, if it, I don't know how they work to that level.
Okay, but what I'm trying to get at from here with all the knowledge that you've just bestowed upon me is every company out there needs to run every one of their employees' computers in a VMware state so that...
Well,
yes, they need to.
I'd say no. It's expensive.
Yes, but in the long run, to keep the business going, it's well worth it.
The big answer to that is it depends. Because there a VDI solution, a virtual desktop infrastructure solution, will not work good for every industry. Because you've got things like really heavy CPU needs and things like AutoCAD, heavy video usage, video editing, where you need to have a full-blown computer. And sometimes a virtual machine is not going to cut it. If you're doing, you know what I mean?
Examples like here, like a hearing center or a bank, places where they're not...
You're talking about basic business usage.
Basic business use, they might be able to do stuff like that.
They could potentially do that, yeah.
Sweet, they, you heard know. It here, everybody. Adam has come up with a surefire plan
to keep ransomware
off your system.
Contact a security company. I'm just speaking in generalities and from experience.
Yeah.
There's no one solution that does everything. It's going to take a layered approach. Security is a layered approach. And there's a philosophy in IT security. It's deny everything and... you know, from the start, and then only let in what you need to. Only allow access where needed. And okay, it used to be allow access to everything and deny, you know, it's kind of like saying blacklist everything and only whitelist the people that you want to email you. It wouldn't really work good for email, but...
Every business just runs 100% just an intranet, and only the one IT guy has access to the outside world, so everything's filtered through him. Every email, every file that needs to be sent out or brought in goes through the one IT guy, and everybody else just works on an intranet. Case solved.
There you go.
Yeah.
Now, one place that you would not have to worry about ransomware, that you would think, at least, is if you were a Jedi.
Why would that be?
Well, you just don't see any viruses in the Star Wars universe as far as trying to steal from a business.
I don't know, man.
Like
the Millennium Falcon, there was a lot of issues with that. It might have had a virus.
You can just program a droid to watch that stuff for you.
That's what I was going to say. That's the weird thing about Star Wars is that every droid seems to be able to tap into any system, any ship, any door locks.
Oh, yeah. Just, they're all hackers.
You know, it's all interconnected.
That's a good point.
I wonder if there's viruses in Star. That's what, interesting. Anyways.
I don't know. There has to be. I'm probably wrong.
Well, when Leia recorded that that video on R2-D2, that was kind of a virus, wasn't it? Because they banged it and...
It was an embedded code.
Yeah.
With a glitch.
So we have an interesting article here, which Dave and Adam really want to talk about. Specifically Dave, because he's the only one that's seen the movie.
No, I've seen it now.
Oh, did you see it now, Adam?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
I'm the only one
that hasn't seen it. But over on Screen Rant, great website if you guys have never been to it before. If you love movies, you got to check out the website. But anyway, they have... The title of the article is The Rise of Skywalker. Is it the Justice League of Star Wars? And we tease all the time about how bad Justice League was. At least I was. I really dislike Batman versus Superman. And Justice League was better than that, but I still didn't love it great. But now they're trying to, you know, correlate that to Star Wars. Is Rise of the Skywalker basically Justice League?
Before we get into it, I kind of was looking through this article a little bit while I was listening to that last segment, and I want to make sure if you have not seen Rise of Skywalker yet and don't want to be spoiled, this is your spoiler alert, because it's potential that you could see something in that article that may be a spoiler for you. I didn't see anything just at a glance, but I didn't read it that closely. And in our conversation, Adam, are we going to keep it fairly spoiler-free?
Yeah, we better try to.
Yeah, we'll keep it as spoiler-free as we can, but there may be some little things. So if you don't want to hear spoilers on Rise of Skywalker and you have not seen it yet, go ahead and hit pause. And then once you see it, come back and finish up the segment, because this article is actually, it brings up some interesting points. I don't necessarily agree, but it's a well-put-together comparison.
All right. So what are some of the points, Dave?
Well, So what this article is saying, what they're comparing it to, is not actually so much the storyline and, you know, good or bad or anything like that. They're making an argument saying when you look at Justice League, it was rushed in production, and it was made in a lot of ways as a direct response to the Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice film, meaning that there was a lot of stuff they did in Justice League that was trying to quote unquote correct problems that people had with Batman v Superman. Okay, some interesting correlations there. Now, Star Wars, this latest movie, was also one of these films that, even though it was delayed, but with the untimely death of Carrie Fisher and all of this stuff, production got kind of crammed in and rushed in. And when you see when you see Rise of Skywalker, in a lot of ways, like this article says, it's made in direct response to the film that came before it, being The Last Jedi. It's an interesting comparison. Now, I don't know how much we want to get into that, or just the general thoughts on Rise of Skywalker, but they make some interesting points.
So their main point here is that it was made in response to the previous movie.
Well, in the sense that Last Jedi, much like Batman v Superman, faced a huge backlash from a lot of fans because they didn't like the direction of the film, you know, and Adam, we were talking offline about Rise of Skywalker. And kind of the same thing where a lot of people really hated Last Jedi because it wasn't their Star Wars that they were used to, or for whatever reasons they had, and they're entitled to those. But Batman v Superman was plagued with a lot of the same issues where it kind of turned things around. There was a lot of things in that film that really upset people. And when you look at, like, Rise of Skywalker, it was blatant. I mean, you and I talked about it, like, blatantly spending time in Rise of Skywalker to be a counterpoint to events that happened in Last Jedi. Like, no, that doesn't count anymore.
And I think in that sense, this comparison, you know, the main title of this article is this: The Rise of Skywalker is the Justice League of Star Wars, with a tight production defined by course correcting a divisive previous entry. Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker is reminiscent of Justice League. Mm-hmm. In that sense, yeah, it's true. I mean, there's a lot of scenes in the new Star Wars movie that directly address issues, you know, or else slap the last movie in the face a little bit, if not.
Yeah,
you know,
if nothing else, it basically is telling Rian Johnson, who directed The Last Jedi, that we are just going to change everything you did because of fan backlash, and we're going a different direction with this, and so we're going to spend time in this film to undo what you did in the last one, whether you're a fan of it or not. Yeah.
This is where it gets a little divisive because you and I have different takes on The Last Jedi.
Yep.
And I wasn't a fan of it, so I actually enjoyed some of the course correcting things, like, ha, good, you know, as I watch it. Right. But also at the same time, I recognize, did them spending time on this in this 155 minute movie actually carry the story forward?
Right.
You know what I mean? And in some cases, you know what, we could have just let bygones be bygones and carried on and concentrated more on this story. You know, did I like Rise of Skywalker? Yep, I did. Does it have problems? Yep, it does.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's overall, the general feeling I got when walking out of the theater was a little bit of exhaustion because it's very fast paced. I mean, this movie is scene after scene. And in that sense, they jammed a lot of stuff. And I think it would have benefited in the editing room to go relook at this and go, you know what, let's trim some stuff out and let some of these other scenes simmer longer.
Well,
you know what I mean, there's
exactly because there's so many of the actual, how would you put it? The actual plot, you know, points that would kind of give more characters a more fleshed out story. A lot of that stuff gets so truncated because they're inserting the other stuff that's kind of just saying, well, last movie this happened, but now we're changing that, or, you know, there's just a lot of fan service now. I'm very much like you, Adam, although it's kind of interesting because when I told you guys here last week, I think it was last episode, that when I walked out of the theater, I felt happy about it. Like, it wasn't my favorite Star Wars movie, but I was like, yeah, this was fun. And as time has gone on, I need to watch it again, but as time has gone on, there's just some little things that have started to kind of bother me a little bit. Not that I dislike Rise of Skywalker, and not that I love The Last Jedi. To me, this whole trilogy was very like, yeah, it was a fun Star Wars film. I still like Empire and Jedi and New Hope better.
Yeah, the original trilogy is still the best.
These were a fun series of movies, and I'm not one of those super, you know, fans that's going to be like, this isn't my Star Wars, you know, and whatever. I'm not going to get angry about it. But to me, the more I think about it, the more I feel like, man, there's just so much time wasted. And I kind of feel bad for Rian Johnson, who by all accounts is actually a pretty darn good director in a lot of his films. Like Knives Out is in theaters right now, just came out just before Star Wars. That's his latest film, and people are loving it. It's a whodunit kind of mystery type thing starring Daniel
Craig. I didn't know
Craig.
He went to directing, though, after he left AC/DC.
That was Brian Johnson.
Oh, I thought that's what you said. I'm sorry.
No, not Ryan. But so, I mean, he's a good director, yeah. And this was, it's kind of a jerk move by Disney and J.J. Abrams, and kind of, it just leaves an icky taste in my mouth. Like, you really were feeling the need to kind of be that petty and crap on his art that, you know, what he made that much that you felt the need to bake so much of it into this movie instead of just telling the story.
Well, I don't. Yeah, I see that point. I don't know if it's truly petty or if that's just truly like, you know, the Disney boardroom going, you know what, we've got to we want us people to stop hating us so much because we let this guy do Star Wars so badly.
And that's the problem to me. You look at like the success of The Mandalorian. Favreau has created this new world there set within the Star Wars universe, and it's pretty dang cool. And it's like these big companies, and they get so wrapped up in it, and they try and please everybody, and it's impossible.
Yep.
And so rather
and that's
than
another
telling,
good point on the DC parallel there.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that's a good point. Contrasting this with The Mandalorian, which, you know, a lot of people are watching it and enjoying it. So, you know, you're not the only one of my friends that goes, you know what, it's okay, you know, and then I'm just kind of watching it. The pacing of this, of The Mandalorian, is so much better than the pacing of Rise of Skywalker. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, they got more. They got longer time to pace it.
Yeah. A lot of time to pace it out. They've got a much simpler storyline. There's a bit of a mystery to it, and they're still sure to keep a cool, awesome action scene in every single episode. You know, it's still part of that universe. I'm really interested to see where it goes this fall.
Well, here's my question for you then, since you brought up the pacing and the franticness and feeling exhausted when you come out of the theater. Do you think this movie would have been better if they would have created another trilogy of movies and this would have been over the span of three movies?
No. I think it would have been better if they went back and said, you know what, we don't need a new set of people to introduce new characters, never give you any answers about them, and have them ride horses.
Yeah, space horses on a bet, yeah.
And that's the thing, because technically we have three trilogies for Star Wars right now. Yep. What they should have done is, if they're going to do all these different trilogies, have the same director for each trilogy, you know, each set of trilogies. So the last three movies should have had the same director for all three.
Well, it didn't work for the original trilogy.
Well, who was the director? Wasn't
who directed
it
Empire?
George Lucas?
No, he was still the writer.
I thought he directed all three of them, too.
No, the director was Irvin Kershner.
For all three?
Nope.
Oh, so this isn't anything new. They've had different directors for every movie?
Well, the original Star Wars was directed by Lucas, and then I think the Empire Strikes Back was Kershner. Did he also do Return of the Jedi?
I can't remember.
You know, with a property like this, it's amazing they would have so many different directors with different visions. They should have somebody who, if Star Wars was my baby, I would interview directors. I would find somebody that is in the same mindset as me that I know would take care of my child the way I'd want them to take care of it, and then I would let them do all of them. I wouldn't be like, all right, so you babysit my child tonight, I'm going to get a different babysitter tomorrow, and then a different babysitter the next day.
I agree, Jason. I think it might be a case of, oh, I wanted the direction to be different because this was my baby, so then they switch it. But in the original Star Wars trilogy, so it was George Lucas, and then it was Irvin Kershner. And then for Empire Strikes Back, it was Richard Marquand. You contrast that to the amazing Lord of the Rings series where it's Peter Jackson, Peter Jackson, Peter Jackson. And you get to keep, this is exactly what you're saying, you get to keep that consistent vision.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, you know, there's... Who knows? Well, whatever. I love the original Star Wars the most.
I mean, the flip side to that idea, though, with like you said, having someone that's going to go just with that vision. You say JJ did this full trilogy. In my opinion, it'd probably be fun. I would have enjoyed it.
It would feel more complete.
I don't know if it would.
Less disjointed, I'd say.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, to me, though, it would feel just very... safe and stale. I mean, all it we might. Would have seen. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, because when you think of that original trilogy, all three of those films, they work well as a trilogy, New Hope, Empire, and Jedi, but they all feel very different. You know, they're a totally different vibe. They're telling new stories. Yep. They're doing things, and I think that's the biggest problem with Star Wars, is that main trilogy storyline, well, trilogy of trilogies, has gotten so much to the point where they are, you know, whether it be because they're worried about fan outcry or they're worried about who knows what, they have gotten to a point where they feel the need to play it so safe that they're not going to push in and tell some of the cool stories that are out there. And that's where I think things like The Mandalorian and whatever, I know they've got other series coming. They've got the standalone Obi-Wan movie. Some of these standalone films and these series that are not the actual, you know, Skywalker storyline, which that, you know, supposedly finished now. Although the ending of this one makes me think, like, even the title of it's like, how is this the end of the Skywalker storyline when it's called The Rise of Skywalker? I mean, what kind of ending begins?
I think you have a good point here, Dave, in that Disney owns the property now.
Yeah.
It's going to be safe.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's actually
running into the ground.
And I would actually say if it wasn't a Disney property, J.J. Abrams might not have played it as safe, because not all of his work has been super safe. This is the guy that did Lost.
That's what I mean. And you compare that. Now, they compare this to Justice League. I'm in a minority, I understand, where I've enjoyed Man of Steel. I've enjoyed Batman v Superman. I've enjoyed Justice League. Were they as good as, say, what the MCU is putting out? Probably not.
No.
They were trying too hard. But I thoroughly enjoyed seeing them. I wasn't a fan of elements of them, but I thought they were fun stories. Now,
they were entertaining on a surface level for me. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, oh, there's a character I know and recognize and like. This is neat. Whereas the Marvel did it differently, where there's an established story, like, you know.
Well,
the
that's John Favreau again.
Yeah,
he created the whole MCU essentially with taking a chance and telling a story of Iron Man, and I think that's the big difference, is that what the MCU did and what they're still continuing to do. When you look at the lineup that's coming, they're still taking chances. They're going to push into these different stories and do all kinds of crazy stuff. They don't play it safe. Now, Endgame, if you look at Endgame, that's really the best comparison you can have to Rise of Skywalker, being the ending of this phase, so to speak. You know, granted, the Star Wars phase has been, what, 43 years in the making versus the 10 or 12 that the MCU was. And that's going to continue as well. But while Endgame gave you fan service, and it was very fast-paced, and there's, you know, a lot of people complained that their favorite character didn't get enough screen time. What they pulled off was nothing short of amazing. It was telling a unique, interesting story. Whereas Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, yes, you get a resolution to a lot of questions we've had. But to me, it's like it didn't feel like the story itself, this whole final trilogy, the story itself was very, okay.
It was rushed.
Yeah, it was rushed.
And there was a lot of pieces to it. And that's the biggest thing, I think, that I think you and I are on the same page.
A lot of pieces that don't even, like, they introduce stuff and then they never lead anywhere.
Yeah. Well, they open the movie. This is how, Jason, just so you know, this is how rushed the movie is. They open the movie. This is the first time I've ever seen a Star Wars movie like this. They open it with a montage.
Yeah.
Really?
Like, literally just like, boom, boom, boom. We got to show Kylo Ren doing some stuff. all over the place. It was like, wow, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Right.
And it doesn't let up. That's what I mean when I say it felt exhausting. Hmm. Now, that doesn't mean I didn't actually like some parts of it. And,
right.
You know, the visuals, it was a beautiful movie. They did some right. cool stuff.
It was very cool.
It had good humor, yep. you know, things like that. So it was...
You know, if I ever have 6 free hours, I'll probably watch The Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker, because I still haven't seen Last Jedi or Solo mm-hmm. or Rogue One. I haven't seen any of those movies
yet. Go make
it
happen. Mm-hmm. Go make it happen.
Yeah, I'll do it sometime.
So, any final thoughts on that?
I don't know. I enjoyed it. I think if, you know, biggest thing as a Star Wars fan, any film fan really, just... go into it and with an open mind, make up your own mind, just have fun with it. Yep. Because let's
eat
be
your
real.
Popcorn, watch the lightsaber.
Right. You go to a movie like this, you're not going to a film expecting to be impacted on a personal level like something like Schindler's List is going to, you know what I mean?
It's not a
heavy
Sophie's
film.
Sophie's Choice.
Star Wars has always been a fun space romping opera, yes. you know?
Yep.
And that's the difference with the MCU is that they've gone into and they said, you know what? We're not doing just comic book movies. This one is going to be a heist. This one is going to be a, you know, galactic yep. space. And they're doing different genres within their main comic book. And that's the big difference with Justice League and the MCU. And also with Star Wars, because Star Wars is very much just, you know, people like to read a lot more into it. But with the exception of Solo, which I would argue was very much more of a heist film, which was cool, most of the main Star Wars storyline, especially with this last trilogy, has been just very much a popcorn flick. You know, check your brain at the door. Just go along for the ride. Don't analyze it. Don't overanalyze it. Just have fun with it. Enjoy your 2 hours in the theater yep. and leave a happy camper, because that's all there really is to it.
Right. I agree. And I think that's sometimes what people forget, because this is such a property that is held with such reverence because of its, I mean, this is Star Wars,
yep.
right? There's no bigger sci-fi thing I was
Star Trek
there. Well, not
Star Trek versus Star Wars.
Yeah, Star Trek is up there. But I mean, as far as like everybody knows Star Wars, not everybody's like was into Trek.
Right.
They should be.
In my opinion. No, I'm going to get hate for that. But anyway.
That's Adam at digitalsuitpodcast.com.
It's interesting though, because if you look at what DC is doing now, they're doing more of these standalone films like the Joker, mm-hmm. Like the new Batman. Yep. That's coming out, which is, you know, by and large from what I hear, going to be kind of a standalone story. You've got the Birds of Prey film coming, which is going to be its own standalone story, you know. And I think when they decided, you know what, we're going to stop chasing the MCU and just start telling our own unique stories, these one-off things that may or may not lead to something bigger down the road, I think that's a great approach, and I'd like to see Star Wars go in that direction, which in a way they're kind of doing, like we said, with The Mandalorian, because it gives people a chance to kind of forget about comparing everything that comes out new to Jedi and New Hope and Empire. You know, they need a way to just start telling some interesting stories, find out what's catching people's attentions. You know, is it The Mandalorians? Is it some crazy like ancient Sith stuff, or, you know, jumping 1,000 years in the future? What's it going to be? You know, find a way to do it where it's not just trying to rehash and pull at these same characters. So from that aspect, I'm actually hoping that Rise of Skywalker does finish all that. And
Something new. Love the universe. Give us something new.
Right. Something new. And I hate to say it, because I do enjoy some of these characters like Finn and Rey and stuff, but I hope we never see him in another film, you know, honestly, because those characters, what more are they going to do that's not just going to be another safe film? Give us something different.
I wouldn't mind if they're referenced.
Yeah, they can reference them, but you know, I don't need to see the continued adventures of Rey.
Although, 40 years from now, when Rey is much older,
right,
or when Daisy Ridley is much older, that's when we'll see another, you know, the next episode 10.
Right.
Adam.
Yeah,
we won't be around for that.
I know. Anyway, speak for yourself, buddy. I'm going to start eating fruit tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, from what these two guys have said, though, regardless, you need to see this movie. This is
if
you're a Star Wars fan, Star you definitely got to see this movie. Don't let the naysayers tell you it's horrible. Same with Last Jedi. Just see both of them, and I will soon. But we've gone really long here, gentlemen. So, Adam, why don't you take us out?
Yeah, I think it's time to put the lid on the soup. So be sure to check us out at digitalsouppodcast.com. That's where you can find links to all of our stuff, whether it's social media, places to subscribe. You can basically find us anywhere where you listen to podcasts. So be sure to like, subscribe, and leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen. Be sure to tell a friend about us. Hit us up on Twitter at digitalsoupcast. And if you like what you hear, leave us a tip on our Patreon page and we'll have something special for you. So from all of us at the Digital Soup Podcast, all of you guys, Happy New Year. We'll catch you next time.
Take care, guys.
Later, Gators. Classic.
It's the Digital Soup Podcast.